beamed, seemingly oblivious to the undercurrent of tension flowing between Melanie and Tom. "Pop the cork, Mels, and I'll get the glasses." As Melanie peeled off the foil, Flo opened the mirrored cupboard and began rooting around. She came up, slightly flushed, clutching half a dozen flutes, just as there was a resounding pop, and the cork flew through the air and bounced off the flat-screen TV. "Whoops!" Melanie put a hand to her mouth. "Sorry, Flo."
"No worries,"
Flo said brightly, but she checked the TV screen surreptitiously as Melanie bent to pour out the champagne, rubbing it with her sleeve as she cast a slightly harassed look over her shoulder. We each took a glass, and I tried to smile. I don't actually like champagne. It gives me a roaring headache and acid indigestion, and I don't like fizzy drinks much full stop, but no one had given us the opportunity to refuse. Flo held up her glass and turned to look round the little circle, catching all of our eyes, and then stopping, her gaze on Claire.
"Here's to a great hen weekend," she said. "A perfect hen weekend for the best friend a girl could ever have. To my rock, to my BFF, to my heroine and my inspiration, Claire."
"And James," Claire said with a smile. "Otherwise I can't drink. I'm not egotistical enough to toast myself."
"Oh,"
Flo said after a slight check.
"Well, I mean, I just thought, shouldn't this weekend be just about you? I thought the whole point was to forget about the groom for a bit. But of course, if you prefer, to Claire and James."
"To Claire and James," everyone chorused and drank. I drank too, feeling the bubbles fizzing acidly in my throat, making it hard to swallow. Claire and James. Claire and James. I still couldn't believe it, couldn't picture them together. Had he really changed so much in 10 years? I was still staring down into my glass when Nina nudged me in the ribs.
"Come on, are you trying to read your fortune in the dregs of the champagne? I don't think it will work."
"Just thinking," I said with an attempt at a smile. Nina raised her eyebrows, and I thought for one stomach-churning moment that she was going to say something, one of her infamously blunt remarks that left you grazed and wincing. But before she could speak, Flo clapped her hands and said,
"Don't hold back, guys. Pizza time!"
Nina took a plate and helped herself to pizza. I did too. The meat pizzas were covered in cheap pepperoni that was leaking a chemical-smelling red oil all over the board, but after my run, I was hungry. I took a piece of pepperoni and a piece of spinach and mushroom and then loaded up my plate with the charred pita and hummus.
"Guys, use napkins if you need to. I don't want to get oil on the rug,"
Flo said, hovering around us as the others began to dig in.
"Oh, and make sure you leave the veggie slices for Tom, please."
"Flops?"
Claire put a hand on her shoulder.
"I'm sure it's fine. There's no way Tom can eat all those slices, plus there's more in the freezer if we run out."
"I know,"
Flo said. Her face was red and she pushed her hair impatiently back into its clip. There was pizza sauce on her silver top.
"But it's a matter of principle. If people want the veggie option, they should order it. I've got no patience with people who hog the veggie meals just because they don't fancy the meat choice. It just means the veggie guests go without."
"I'm sorry," I said. "But look, I took a piece of the mushroom. Do you want me to put it back?"
"Well, no," Flo said irritably. "It's probably got pepperoni all over it now."
For a second, I thought about pointing out that there was already pepperoni oil over the whole lot, and that maybe if she was that bothered, she should have put them on separate boards, but instead I bit my tongue.
"It's fine,"
Tom said. He'd stacked up his plate with 3 pieces of mushroom pizza and a big dollop of hummus.
"This'll do me, honestly. If I eat any more, Gary'll have me doing pull-ups from here to Christmas."
"Who's Gary?"
Flo said. She took a piece of pepperoni and sat on the sofa.
"I thought your other half was called Bruce."
"Gary's my personal trainer."
Tom looked down at his washboard stomach rather complacently.
"He has an uphill job, poor love."
"You have a personal trainer?"
Flo looked deeply impressed.
"Darling, anyone who's anyone has a personal trainer."
"I don't,"
Nina said flatly.
She stuffed a slice of pizza into her mouth and spoke around it, her voice muffled.
I just go to the gym and work out. I don't need some tool yelling at me while I do it.
Well, she did a heroic swallow.
I do. That's what I've got my iPod for, but I like to be able to put the tool on shuffle if the refrain gets monotonous.
Come on, Tom was laughing.
I can't be the only one here, surely. Nora, what about you? You don't look like you suffer from writer's arse.
Me? I looked up from my pizza, startled at being suddenly in the headlight beam of everyone's attention. No, I don't even have a gym membership, I just run. The only tools I have yelling at me are the kids in Victoria Park.
Claire, then, Tom pleaded. Melanie, come on. Someone back me up here, it's a perfectly normal thing.
I have a trainer, Claire admitted. But, she held up her hand as Tom started to crow, only because I needed to lose a few pounds to get into my wedding dress.
I never understand why people do that. Nina took another bite of pizza. There was pepperoni all dribbling down her chin, and she caught it with her tongue before continuing.
Buy a dress two sizes too small, I mean. After all, presumably, the dude proposed to you when you were a lard ass.
Excuse me?
Claire had started laughing, but there was something a bit brittle about her tone.
I was not a lard ass. And it wasn't about James, although he has a trainer too, I might add. It was about me wanting to look my best on the day.
So, only thin people look good?
That's not what I said.
Well, you said your best equals you minus two dress sizes.
Minus a few pounds, Claire put in hotly. You said two dress sizes. Anyway, you can talk, you're skinny as a rake.
By accident, Nina said loftily. Not design. I'm not sizist. Ask Jess.
Oh, for crying out loud. Claire put her plate down on the table. Look, I happen to think that I personally look better nearer a size 10 than a size 12. Okay? It's nothing to do with anyone else.
Nina, Flo said warningly. But Nina was in full flow, nodding earnestly and playing up to Tom's snickered laughter behind his hand and Melanie's half-hidden smirk.
Yeah, I get it, she was saying.
It's nothing to do with ridiculous Western idealization of anorexic models and the constant portrayal of stick-thin waifs in the media. In fact, Nina, Flo said again, more angrily this time.
She stood up, banging her plate down, and Nina looked up, startled, mid-sentence.
I beg your pardon?
You heard me.
I don't know what your problem is, but leave it, okay?
This is Claire's night, and I will not have you picking a fight.
Who's picking fights? I'm not the one throwing plates around, Nina said coolly. What a shame, when you were so keen to take care of your aunt's things.
We all followed the direction of her gaze and saw the crack across the plate Flo had smacked onto the coffee table. For a second, I had the image of a goaded bull about to charge.
Look,
Flo said furiously, and the room went quite still. Pizza slices suspended in mid-air, glasses half-sipped, waiting for the explosion to happen.
It's okay, Claire said into the tense pause.
She put her hand out, pulling Flo back to sit beside her and laughing.
Honestly, it's just Nina's sense of humour. You'll get used to her. She's not having a go at me.
Much?
Yeah, Nina said.
She nodded, completely straight-faced.
I'm sorry. I just think the cripplingly unrealistic body expectations of women are hilarious.
Flo looked at Nina for a long moment, and then back at Claire, her face uncertain. Then she gave a short laugh. It was not terribly convincing.
Come on,
Tom broke into the silence that followed.
This party is not nearly drunk and disorderly enough for my liking. Who's up for the next shot?
He looked around the group and his eye fell on me. A wicked grin spread across his tanned face.
Nora, you're looking far too sober. You never did have that pre-dinner shot.
I groaned, but Nina was nodding vigorously and pushing the full shot glass at me, and Tom was holding out the lime wedge and salt shaker. There was nothing for it, best just to get it over with, like medicine. Tom shook the salt into the crook of my wrist, and I licked it off, grabbed the shot from Nina, and gulped it back, and then snatched the chunk of lime from Tom's hand. The juice exploded between my teeth, even as the tequila ran hot down the inside of my gullet. I waited for a moment, gasping and gritting my teeth against the taste, and then a familiar warmth began to spread through my capillaries, something loosening at the edge of my vision, a certain blunting of reality. Perhaps this weekend would be a whole lot better, slightly drunk. I realized they were all looking at me, waiting for something. The shot glass was still in my hand. Done! I banged it down onto the table and dropped the lime peel onto my empty plate. Who's next?
Make it a royale? Tom inquired archly. He held up the white bag.
Claire nudged me in the ribs.
Come on, for old time's sake, yeah? Remember our first line?
I did, though I was pretty sure it hadn't been Coke. Ground up aspirin, more like, and I hadn't really wanted to do it even then. I'd just followed Claire, sheep-like, afraid of being left behind.
We'll do it together, Claire told him. Cut one for Nina, too. She partakes, don't you, Doctor?
You know doctors,
Nina said with a dry smile.
Notorious self-medicators.
Tom knelt at the corner of the glass coffee table with his credit card and the bag of powder, and we all watched as he ceremoniously poured and chopped and separated the powder into four neat lines. Then he looked up and raised his eyebrows inquiringly.
I'm assuming Mel Pump and Dump Cho will not be joining us, but what about you, Florence, hostess with the mostest clay?
I looked across at Flo. Her face was very pink, as if she'd drunk considerably more than the one glass of champagne I'd seen in her hand.
Guys, she said stiffly, I'm not very happy with this. I mean, it's my aunt's house. What if...
Oh, Flops!
Claire gave her a kiss and put her hand over her mouth, stopping her protests.
Don't be ridiculous. Don't have any if you don't want to, but I really don't think your aunt's going to rock up here with her sniffer dogs and start taking names.
Flo shook her head and pulled herself out of Claire's arm to start clearing plates. Melanie got up too.
I'll help you, she said pointedly.
All the more for those who do,
Tom said with slightly aggressive cheerfulness. He rolled up a £10 note and snorted up his line, wiping his nose and rubbing the grains on his gums.
Claire?
Claire knelt and did the same with a practiced swiftness that made me wonder how often she did this. She stood up, swayed slightly, and then laughed.
Christ, I can't be high already. Must be the tequila. Nina?
She held out the tenner. Nina made a face.
Thanks, but no thanks. Palm that snot rag off on some unsuspecting shop assistant. I'll use my own, thanks.
She ripped a strip off the cover of the Vogue Living that was lying on the hearth and snorted up the third line. I winced, looking at the butchered cover and hoping Flo wouldn't notice when she came back.
Nora?
I sighed. It was true that I'd done my first line with Claire. It had also been one of my last. Don't get me wrong, I smoked and drank and did various other drugs at college, but I never really enjoyed cocaine. It never did much for me. Now I felt like an absurd caricature as I knelt awkwardly on the rug and let Nina vandalize Vogue Living a bit more. It felt like a scene from a bad horror movie, just before the slasher comes in and starts stabbing people. All we needed was a couple of kids making out in the pool house to be the first victims. I snorted up the line and stood up, feeling the blood rush away from my head and my nose and the back of my mouth grow numb and strange. I was too old for this. It was never really me, even back at school. I'd only gone along with Claire because I was too weak-willed to say no. I remembered, as if through a haze, James holding forth about the hypocrisy of it all. They make me laugh, doing sponsored fasts for Oxfam and protesting about Nestle and then funneling their pocket money off to Colombian drug barons. Tossers. Can't they see the irony? Give me a nice bit of homegrown weed any day. I sank back on the sofa and shut my eyes, feeling the tequila, champagne and coke mixing in my veins. All evening I had been trying to connect the boy I'd known with the Claire of today, and this only brought into sharp focus the strangeness of it all. Had he really changed that much? Did they sit in their London flats, snorting up side by side?
And did he think of what he'd said when he was 16 and reflect on the irony of it? The irony that he was now one of those tossers he'd laughed at all those years ago. The picture hurt, like an old half-healed wound griping unexpectedly.
Lee!
I heard Claire's voice as if through a haze and opened my eyes reluctantly.
Lee! Come on, focus, girl. You're not drunk already, are you?
No, I'm not. I sat up, rubbing my face. I had to get through this. There was no way out now, except forwards. I'm not nearly drunk enough, in fact. Where's the tequila?
Chapter 10.
I have never...
Claire was sprawled across the sofa with her feet on Tom's lap and the firelight playing off her hair. She was holding a shot glass in one hand and a piece of lime in the other, balancing them as if weighing up her options.
I have never... joined the Mile High Club.
There was a silence around the circle and a burst of laughter from Flo. Then, very slowly, with a wry expression, Tom raised his shot glass.
Cheers, darling.
He downed it in one, then sucked the lime, making a face.
Oh, you and Bruce?
Claire said, her voice hovered between a sneer and a laugh, but it was fairly good-natured.
You probably did it in first class.
Business, but point taken.
He refilled and looked around the circle.
What, seriously? Am I drinking alone?
What?
Melanie looked up from her phone.
Sorry, I had half a bar of reception then, so I thought I'd try Bill, but it's gone. Was it truth or dare?
Neither. We've moved on,
Tom said. His voice was slurred. He had certainly done a lot of weird shit in his time, and he was paying the price in this game.
We're playing I Have Never, and I have joined the Mile High Club.
Oh, sorry.
Melanie downed her shot absently and wiped her mouth.
There. Listen, Flo, could I use the landline again?
No, 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 Claire said, wagging her finger. You don't get off as easily as that.
Certainly not, Flo said indignantly. How and where, please, missus?
On honeymoon with Bill. It was a night flight. I gave him a blowy in the loos. Does that count? I've drunk now, anyway.
Well, technically, he's joined the Mile High Club, not you in that case.
Tom said. He gave a slightly slow, leering wink.
But since you drank, we'll count it. Onwards. Right, my turn. I have never...
Fuck, what have I never done?
Oh, I know. I've never tried water sports.
There was a burst of laughter, and no one drank, and Tom groaned.
What, seriously?
Water sports?
Flo said uncertainly. Her glass was halfway in the air, but she looked around the circle, trying to work out what was funny.
What? Like scuba diving and stuff? I've done sailing. Does that count?
No, sweetie,
Claire said, and she bent over and whispered in Flo's ear. As she did, Flo's expression changed to one of shock and then disgusted amusement.
No way. How revolting. Come on, Tom said pleadingly. Fess up for Uncle Tom. We're all girls here. There's nothing to be ashamed of.
There was another silence, and Claire laughed.
Sorry, that's what you get for coming away with squares like us. Come on, take it like a man.
Tom downed his shot, refilled, and then lay back on the sofa, his hand over his eyes.
Bloody hell. I'm paying for a misspent youth now. The room's spinning.
Your turn, Lee.
Claire said from the sofa. Her face was flushed and her golden hair straggled across her shoulders.
Spill!
My stomach turned. This was the moment I'd been dreading. I'd spent the last round trying to grope my way past the fog of tequila and champagne and rum and think what to say, but every memory seemed to bring me back to James. I thought of all the things I'd never done, never said. I shut my eyes and the room seemed to lurch and shift. It was one thing to play this game with a room full of friends who already knew pretty much everything there was to say, but not this uneasy mix of strangers and old acquaintances. I have never...
Oh, God, what could I say? I never found out why he did it. I never forgave him. I never got over him.
Lee, Claire said in a sing-song voice. Come on now, don't make me embarrass you in the next round.
There was a vile taste of tequila and coke at the back of my mouth. I couldn't afford to drink again. If I did, I'd be sick. I never really knew him at all. How could he be marrying Claire?
I have never had a tattoo, I blurted out.
I knew I was on safe ground with that. Tom had already admitted to having one.
Crap,
he groaned and downed his shot. Flo laughed.
Come on, you don't get off that easily. Show and tell, please.
Tom sighed and unbuttoned his shirt, revealing an expanse of tanned, toned chest.
He slid the sleeve down one shoulder and turned to show us.
It was a heart, pierced with an arrow and crossed with the flowing letters, Not So Dumb, in italic script.
There,
he began buttoning up his shirt.
Oh, come on, you others. I can't be the only one.
Nina said nothing, but simply pulled up the ankle of her jeans, showing a small bird of some kind on the tendon running up from her ankle.
What is it?
Flo peered closer.
Blackbird?
It's a falcon, Nina said.
She did not elaborate, but simply pulled her jeans back and downed her shot.
How about you, then?
Flo shook her head.
Too much for scaredy cat. Claire does, though.
Claire grinned and heaved herself up off the sofa. She turned her back to us and pulled up her silver top. It shimmered like a fish skin.
Twining up from the back of her jeans were two black Celtic designs, curving out towards her slim waist.
Arse antlers! Nina gave a snort.
Youthful folly, Claire said,
a touch ruefully.
Drunken trip to Brighton when I was 22.
They're going to look delightful when you're an old lady,
Nina said.
At least they'll provide a homing path for the young man slated to wipe your arse in the nursing home.
It'll give him something to look at, poor sod.
Claire pulled down her top, laughing, and flung herself back on the sofa. She drained her shot.
Mels,
she called out. But Melanie had dragged the phone out into the hall. Only the trailing wire and the sound of her low, urgent voice gave away her location.
And he took the bottle,
we heard from the hallway.
How many ounces?
Screw that, Nina said decisively. Man overboard. Right. I have never...
She looked from me to Claire, and there was suddenly a very wicked expression on her face. My stomach flipped. Nina, drunk, is not always a nice person to be around.
I have never fucked James Cooper.
There was an uncertain laugh round the room. Claire shrugged and drank. Then her cornflower blue eyes and Nina's coffee brown ones turned on me. There was an absolute silence, broken only by Florence and the machine telling us that her boy built coffins.
Fuck you, Nina.
My hand was trembling as I tossed back the drink. Then I got up and walked out into the hallway, my cheeks burning, and suddenly feeling very, very drunk.
You can always give him half a banana for breakfast, Melanie was saying. But if you give him grapes, cut them in half first or use that mesh thing.
I pushed past her up the stairs, Flo's bemused,
What? What happened?
Following me as I fled. On the landing, I burst into the bathroom and locked the door behind me. Then I knelt in front of the toilet, retching and retching until there was nothing left to throw up. Oh, Christ, I was drunk. Drunk enough to go downstairs and smack Nina for the shit-stirring bitch she was. Okay, she didn't know the full picture about me and James, but she knew enough to realize that she was putting me in a horrible position, and Claire. For a minute, I hated them all. Nina for goading me with her horrible needling questions, Flo and Tom for gawping as I drank, Claire for forcing me to come, and most of all, I hated James. For asking Claire to marry him, for starting this whole chain off. I even hated poor, blameless, oblivious Melanie just for being here. My stomach heaved again, but there was nothing left,
apart from a vile taste of tequila in my mouth as I stood and spat into the toilet bowl. Then I flushed and went to the mirror to rinse out my mouth and splash water on my face. I was white, with a blotchy, hectic flush on my cheekbones, and my mascara was smudged.
Lee?
There was a knock at the door. I recognized Claire's voice and put my face in my hands.
I need a minute.
Oh, I was stammering. I hadn't stammered since I left school. Somehow I had shed it, along with the sad, awkward personality of Lee the moment I stepped out of Reading. Nora had never stammered. I was slipping back into Lee.
Lee, I'm sorry. Nina shouldn't have...
Oh, fuck off, I thought. Please, just leave me alone. There was the sound of low voices outside the door, and I tried with shaking fingers to fix my mascara using toilet paper. God, this was pathetic. It was like being back at school, bitch fights and sniping and everything. I had sworn never to go back. This had been a mistake, a dreadful, dreadful mistake.
I'm sorry, Nora.
It was Nina's voice, slurred with alcohol, but tinged with real concern. At least it sounded so.
I didn't think. Please come out.
I need to go to bed, I said. There was a catch in my throat, hoarseness from throwing up.
Nora, please,
Claire begged.
Come on, I'm sorry. Nina's sorry.
I took a deep breath and slid back the lock. They were standing outside, their expressions hangdog in the bright light from the bathroom.
Please, Lee,
Claire took my hand.
Come back down.
It's fine, I said. Honestly. But I really am tired. I was up at 5 to catch the train.
All right.
Claire let go of my hand reluctantly.
As long as you're not going off in a snit.
I felt my teeth grit in spite of myself. Be calm. Don't make this all about you.
No, I'm not going off in a snit, I said, trying to keep my voice light.
I'm just tired. Now, I'm going to brush my teeth. See you in the morning. I elbowed past them to the bedroom to get my wash bag. And when I came back, they were still there, Nina tapping her foot on the parquet.
So you really mean it, she said. You're bailing out.
Christ, Lee, it was just a joke. If anyone's got right to be offended, it's Claire, and she's taking it okay.
You lost your sense of humour since school?
For a second, I thought of all the replies I could make. It wasn't a joke. She knew full well what that question meant to me, and she deliberately brought James up in the one place and at the one time I couldn't dodge it or smooth it over. But what was the point? Like an idiot, I'd taken the bait, exploded on cue, it was done.
I'm not bailing out, I said wearily. It's gone midnight. I've been up since 5. Please, I really just want some sleep.
I realized, even as I said the words, that I was pleading, offering up excuses, trying to absolve myself of guilt for leaving the party. Somehow the realization stiffened my nerve. We weren't 16 anymore. We didn't have to hang around like there was an invisible umbilical cord tethering us together. We'd gone our separate ways and all survived. Me getting some sleep wasn't going to ruin Claire's hen forever, and I didn't have to justify the decision like a prisoner in the Star Chamber.
I'm going to bed, I repeated.
There was a pause. Claire and Nina looked at each other, and then Claire said,
Okay.
For some irrational reason, that single word annoyed me more than anything else. I knew she was only agreeing, but the word had a ring of permission granted that made my skin crawl. I am not yours to boss around anymore. Night, I said shortly, and pushed past them into the bathroom. Over the running water and the toothbrush's rasp, I could hear them whispering outside, and I deliberately stayed in there, wiping off my mascara with unaccustomed care until their voices disappeared, and I heard their footsteps on the parquet trailing away. I let out a breath. releasing tension I hadn't even known I was holding, and felt the muscles in my neck and shoulder unclench. Why? Why did they still have this power over me, Claire in particular? Why did I let them? I sighed, shoved the toothbrush and toothpaste back into my wash bag, pushed open the door, and padded up the hallway to the bedroom. It was cool and quiet, quite different from the overheated, overpopulated living room. I could hear Jarvis Cocker in the background, his voice floating up the open hallway, but the sound muted to just a muffled bass line when I shut the bedroom door and flopped down on the bed. The relief was indescribable. If I shut my eyes, I could almost imagine myself back in my little flat in Hackney. Only the sound of traffic and honking horns outside was missing. I wished myself back there, so powerfully that I could almost feel the worn softness of my flowered duvet cover beneath my palm, see the rattan blind that flapped softly at the window on summer nights. But then there was a knock at the door, and when I opened my eyes, the blank blackness of the forest reflected back at me from the glass wall. I sighed, gearing myself up to answer it, and then the knock came again.
"Lee?"
I got up and opened the door. It was Flo standing outside, her hands on her hips.
"Lee, I can't believe you're doing this to Claire."
"What?" I felt immensely tired all of a sudden. "Doing what? Going to bed?"
"I've gone to loads of effort to make this a perfect weekend for Claire. I'll kill you if you ruin it on the very first night."
"I'm not ruining anything, Flo. You're the one making this into a big deal, not me. I just want to go to bed, all right?"
"No, it's not all right. I won't have you sabotaging everything I've worked for."
"I just want to go to bed," I repeated like a mantra.
"Well, I think you're being a selfish bitch."
Flo burst out. Her face was red and she looked as if she was on the verge of tears.
Claire's the best, okay? And she deserves...
Her chin wobbled. "Yeah, whatever," I said, and before I could think better of it, I shut the door in her face. For a minute I heard her outside, breathing heavily, and I thought, if she sobs, I'm going to have to go out there and apologize. I can't sit here and listen to her breaking down outside my door. But she didn't. By some huge effort, she got herself together and went downstairs, leaving me very close to crying myself. I don't know when Nina came up, but it was late, very late. I wasn't asleep, but I was pretending to be, huddled under the duvet with my pillow over my head, as she padded heavily around the room, knocking over tubes of lotion and kicking her suitcase.
"Are you awake?"
she whispered as she slid into the twin bed next to mine. I considered ignoring her, but then I sighed and turned over. "No, probably because you've knocked over every bottle in the place."
"Sorry."
She huddled down under the sheets, and I saw the glint of her eye as she yawned and blinked tiredly. "Look, I'm sorry about earlier. I honestly didn't." "It's all right," I said wearily. "I'm sorry too. I overreacted. I was just tired and drunk." I'd already made up my mind to apologize to Flo in the morning. Whoever was at fault here, it certainly wasn't her. "No, it was me," Nina said. She flung herself onto her back and put her hand over her eyes. "I was being my usual shit-stirring self.
But, you know, it's been 10 years. I think I could be forgiven for assuming..."
She trailed off. But I knew what she meant. You could be forgiven for thinking a normal person would have got over whatever happened, moved on. "I know," I said wearily. "Do you think I don't? It's pathetic." "Nora, what happened? Clearly something did. You don't act like this over a normal breakup." "Nothing happened. He dumped me. End of." "That's not what I heard." She rolled onto her side again, and I felt her gaze on my face in the darkness. "I heard you dumped him."
"Well, you heard wrong. He dumped me. By text,
if you must know. I got rid of the phone soon after. The cheerfully insouciant cheep-cheep alert never stopped stinging.
Okay, but still...
Look, I never asked, but did he... She stopped. I could hear the cogs in her brain turning, trying to work out how to phrase something tricky. I kept silent. Whatever it was she was thinking, I wasn't going to help her.
Oh, fuck it. There's no way to say this without prying, but I have to say it.
He didn't hit you, did he?
What?
I wasn't expecting that.
Okay, clearly not. Sorry.
Nina turned onto her back.
I'm sorry. But honestly, Lee.
Nora.
Sorry. Sorry, Claire's got me doing it. And you're right. It doesn't make any sense. But honestly, though, the way you reacted after you guys split up, you can't blame people for wondering.
People? Look, we were 16. You leaving town and James falling apart was pretty dramatic. There was talk, all right?
Jesus wept.
I stared up at the ceiling. There was utter silence, but for a strange soft patter outside. Like rain, but softer.
Is that really what people thought?
Yep, Nina said laconically.
I'd say that was the most popular of the theories. That or gave you an STD.
God, poor James. In spite of what he'd done, he didn't deserve that.
No,
I said at last. No, James Cooper did not beat me up or give me an STD.
And you're very welcome to tell anyone that who wonders about it in your hearing.
Now, good night. I'm going to sleep.
What then? If it wasn't that, what happened?
Good night. I turned on my side, listening to the silence, the sound of Nina's exasperated breathing, and the soft patter outside. And then, at last, I slept. Chapter 11
Voices in the corridor outside. They filter into my dream through the morphine haze, and for a moment I think I'm back at the glass house, and Claire and Flo are whispering outside my door. They're shaking hands, holding the gun. We should have checked the house. Then I open my eyes, and I remember where I am. The hospital. The people outside my door are nurses, night orderlies, maybe even the police officer I saw earlier. I lie there, blinking and trying to make my tired, drug-addled brain work. What time is it? The hospital lights are dimmed for night, but I have no sense of whether it's 9 p.m. or 4 a.m. I twist my head to look for my phone. Always when awake, I check the time on my phone. It's the first thing I do. But the locker beside my bed is empty. My phone is not there. There are no clothes hanging on the chair by the window, no pockets in the hospital gown I'm wearing. My phone is gone. I lie there, looking around the small, dimly lit room. It's a private room, which seems odd, but maybe the main ward was full. Or perhaps that's just how they do things up here. There are no other patients to ask and no clock on the wall. If the softly blinking green monitor by my head has a time display, I can't see it. For a minute, I think about calling out, asking the policewoman outside my door what the time is, where I am, what's happened to me. But then I realize she's talking to someone else. It was their low voices that woke me. I swallow, dry and sticky, and pull my head painfully off the pillow, ready to croak out an appeal. But before I can speak, one sentence filters through the thick glass of the door and glues my dry tongue to the roof of my mouth.
Oh, Jesus. I hear. So now we're looking at murder.
Chapter 12 I woke to a clear, bright silence, broken only by Nina's soft snoring in the bed next to mine. But as I lay there, stretching my muscles and wishing I'd refilled my water glass, I began to disentangle the sounds of the forest. Birdsong,
a snap of twigs, and a soft flump that I didn't recognize, followed by a flurry of gentle sounds like sheets of paper falling to the floor. I glanced at my phone. 6:48, still no reception, and then grabbed a cardigan and padded to the window. When I drew back the curtain, I almost laughed. It had snowed in the night. Not heavily, but enough to transform the landscape into a Victorian picture postcard. That was the strange pattering I'd heard the night before. If I'd got up and looked outside the window, I would have known. The sky was a blaze of pinks and blues, the clouds peach-coloured and lit from beneath, the ground a soft, speckled carpet of white, crisscrossed with bird prints and fallen pine needles. The sight made my feet itch, and I knew immediately and piercingly that I had to go for a run. My trainers on the radiator were crusted with mud from yesterday, but they were dry, and so were my leggings. I pulled on a thermal top and hat, but I didn't think I'd need a coat. Even running on a frosty day, I give off enough heat to keep myself warm, provided the wind doesn't get up. The morning outside was still. Not a tree branch waved in the wind, and the only snowfalls were caused by gravity, not wind. Tree branches bending beneath the weight of their load. I could hear gentle snores from all the rooms as I padded quietly down the stairs in my socks, pulling on my trainers only when I got to the doormat to save Flo's aunt's floors. The front door had an intimidating array of locks and bolts, so I tiptoed through to the kitchen, which was just the kind with a handle and a key. The key turned smoothly, and I lifted the handle. I winced as I pulled open the door, suddenly wondering if there was an alarm I should have deactivated. But no screaming siren rang out, and I slipped out into the frosty morning undetected and began my warm-up. It was maybe 40 minutes later when I jogged slowly back up the forest path, my cheeks glowing with the cold and exertion, my breath a cloud of white against the piercing blue of the sky. I felt light and calm. The frustrations and tensions left somewhere back in the forest. But it was with a slightly sinking heart that I saw the combi boiler was emitting a cloud of steam like an express train. Someone was up and using the hot water. I'd been hoping to have a quiet hour to myself as the others slept, breakfast on my own terms, without awkward small talk. But as I came closer, I saw that not only was someone up, but they'd been outside. There were footsteps leading from a back entrance to the garage and back. How odd. All the cars were parked out front of the house in the open. What reason could anyone have for going into the garage? But my sweaty top was starting to make me feel cold now that I wasn't powering up the hill, and I wanted coffee. I headed back to the kitchen door. Whoever was awake would have an explanation. Hello? I called quietly as I opened the door, not wanting to wake the others. Only me? Someone was sitting at the counter, bent over a mobile. She lifted her head, and I saw it was Melanie. Hey! She gave a smile, her deep, peachy dimples coming and going in her cheek. I didn't think anyone else was up. Have you been out for a run in that snow? You nutter! It's gorgeous! I stamped the snow off my trainers on the outside mat and then pulled them off, holding them by the laces. What's the time? 7:30. I've been up for about 20 minutes. It's bloody ironic. My one chance to get a lie in without Ben waking me up, and here I am. I can't sleep.
You've been conditioned, I said,
and she sighed. Too bloody right.
Want a tea?
I'd rather have coffee if there's one going.
Too late, I remembered. Oh, bugger, there's no coffee, is there?
Nope. I'm dying. I'm a coffee girl, too, at home. Always used to be tea at university, but Bill converted me. I've tried to drink enough tea to give me the equivalent caffeine, but I think my bladder can't physically take it.
Oh, well. Tea would be hot and wet, at least.
I'd love a tea. Do you mind if I just hop in the shower first and change my clothes? I ran in these yesterday, too. I probably stink. No worries. I was making toast as well. I'll have it ready when you come down.
When I came downstairs 10 minutes later, it was to the smell of toast and the sound of Melanie humming The Wheels on the Bus.
Hey, she said as I came into the kitchen, toweling my hair. So there's Marmite, marmalade or strawberry jam?
No raspberry?
Nope.
Marmite then, please.
She spread it on and shoved the plate across at me and then looked surreptitiously down at her phone on the countertop.
I took a bite and asked.
Still no reception.
No.
Her polite smile slipped.
It's really getting to me. He's only just 6 months, and he's been a bit unsettled since we started him on solids. I know it's lame, but I hate being away from him.
I can imagine, I said sympathetically, though I couldn't really. But I could relate to the longing for home, and that must be several times stronger with someone small and helpless waiting for your return. What's he like? I said, trying to cheer her up.
Oh, he's lovely.
Her smile came back, a bit more convincing this time, and she picked up her phone and began flicking through gallery shots.
Look, here's a photo of him with his first tooth.
I saw a blurred shot of a moon-faced child with no discernible teeth at all, but she flipped past it, looking for something else. We went past one that looked like an explosion in a Coleman's mustard factory, and she grimaced.
Oh, God, sorry about that one.
What was it?
Ben with a massive poo that went right up to his hair. I took a pic to show Bill at work.
Bill and Ben?
I know. She gave a sheepish laugh. We started calling him Ben in my tummy as a joke, and somehow it stuck. I do feel a bit bad, but I figure he's not going to be paired up with his dad very often in life. Oh, look at this one, his first swim.
This one was clearer. A shocked little face in a bright blue pool, the mouth an outraged red, oh, of furious indignity. He looks lovely, I said, trying not to sound wistful. God knows I don't want a baby. But there's something about seeing someone else's happy family unit that feels excluding, even when it's not meant to be.
He is, Melanie said, her face soft. I feel very blessed.
She touched the cross at her neck, almost unconsciously, and then sighed.
I just wish there were reception here. I honestly thought I was ready to leave him, but now... 2 nights is too much... I keep thinking, what if something goes wrong and Bill can't ring?
He's got the house phone number, though, hasn't he? I took a bite of toast and Marmite. Melanie nodded.
Yes. In fact...
She looked at the time on her phone again.
I said he'd phone in this morning. He was nervous about ringing early in case he woke everyone up. Do you mind if I...
Not at all, I said. And she got up, drained her cup, and put it on the counter.
Oh, by the way... I suddenly remembered as she headed towards the door. I meant to ask, did you go out to the garage?
No. She looked surprised, her voice framing the word as a question.
How come? Was it open?
I don't know. I didn't try the door, but there were footsteps going out there.
How odd? Wasn't me.
Bizarre. I took another bite and chewed thoughtfully. The footsteps were crisp, so they must have been made sometime after the snow had finished falling.
You don't think, I said, then stopped. What?
I hadn't thought through what I'd been about to say, and now, as I said the words, I felt an odd reluctance to voice them.
Well, I assumed it was someone coming from the house to the garage and back, but it could have been the other way round.
What? Like someone snooping round?
Were there footsteps coming up to the garage?
I didn't see any, but the garage is so close to the wood. And I don't think the tracks would show there. The snow's too patchy and broken up. Plus, although I didn't say it, if there'd been any tracks on the forest path, my run had probably just effectively obliterated them.
Never mind, I said, picking up the tea determinedly. This is silly. It was probably just Flo going out to get something.
Yeah, you're right, Melanie said. She gave a shrug and left the room, and I heard the ching of the receiver as she picked up the handset. But instead of the sound of the dial clicking around, I heard ching, 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 and then a bang as the receiver was slammed down.
For crying out loud, the phone line's down. Honestly, this is the last straw. What if something's happened to Ben?
Hang on. I put my plate in the dishwasher and followed her into the living room. Let me try. Maybe it's his number.
It's not his number, she handed me the receiver. It's dead. Listen.
She was right. There was no dial tone, just an echoing empty line and a faint sound of clicking. It must be the snow. I thought of the branches in the forest, weighed down by their burden.
It must have brought down a tree branch and snapped the line. The engineers will get it back up, I imagine, but...
But when? Melanie said. Her face was pink and upset, and there were tears in her eyes.
I didn't want to make a big deal about this to Claire, but this was my first trip away, and to be honest, I'm having a pretty shitty time. I know I'm supposed to be all like, woo, night out with the girls, but I don't want to do this anymore. All this drinking and stupid pissing about. I don't give a fuck who slept with who. I just want to go home and cuddle Ben. You want to know the real reason I woke up early? Because my tits were rock hard with milk and they were so painful they woke me up leaking all over the fucking bed.
She was really crying now, her nose running.
I had to get up and pump into the sink. And now this is the last straw. I've got no idea if they're okay. I don't want to be here anymore.
I stared at her, biting my lip. Part of me wanted to hug her. The other part of me was recoiling from her tear-stained, snot-dripping face.
Hey, I said awkwardly. Hey, look, if you're having a shit time...
But I stopped. She wasn't listening. She was staring not at me, but out of the window at the snow-bound forest, turning something over in her mind, breathing slowly as her sobs subsided. Melanie? I ventured at last. She turned to look at me and wiped her face on her dressing gown sleeve.
I'm going to go, she said.
It was so sudden that I didn't know what to say.
Flo will kill me, but I don't care. Claire won't mind. I don't think she gave a toss about having a hen in the first place. It was all Flo's weird obsession with being the world's best friend.
Do you think I can get my car down the drive?
Yes, I said.
It's only a dustling under the trees. But look, what about Tom? You gave him a lift, didn't you?
Only from Newcastle.
She wiped her face again. She looked calmer now her mind was made up.
I'm sure Claire or Nina or someone will take him back. It's not a big deal.
I guess. I bit my lip, imagining Flo's reaction to all this.
Look, are you sure you don't want to give it a bit longer? They'll get the phone line up soon, I'm sure.
No, I've made up my mind. I'm going now. I mean, I'll wait until Flo gets up, but I'm going up to pack now.
Oh, what a relief.
She was smiling suddenly, her face from cloud to sunshine in just a few moments, the dimples back in her cheeks.
Thanks for listening. I'm sorry I lost it a bit, but you've really straightened me out. I mean, you're right. If you're having a shit time, what's the point of being here? Claire wouldn't want me to hang around feeling miserable.
I watched her as she made her way slowly up the stairs, presumably to repack her stuff, and pondered her last words. What was the point of being here? I realized suddenly that I hadn't wanted her to go. Not because I liked her or would miss her. I didn't know her well enough for that, though she seemed perfectly nice. But because I'd had some fantasy of my own of escaping. And being one down would make it that much harder. There would be that small amount of extra pressure on the survivors to make up for Melanie's absence. And without a car, and without the alibi of a small baby, what reason could I possibly come up with that wouldn't be construed as sour grapes over James, over the fact that the better woman had won and got my ex-boyfriend for herself? I thought I had long since stopped giving a fuck what Claire Cavendish thought of me. I realized, as I walked slowly back to the kitchen, that I was wrong.
Chapter 13. This is how I met Claire. It was the first day at primary school, and I was sitting by myself at a desk and trying not to cry. Everyone else had gone to the school nursery, and I hadn't, and I didn't know anyone. I was small and skinny, with hard little braids that my mother knotted into the side of my scalp to keep off the nits. I could read, but I didn't want anyone to know. My mother had said that it would make me unpopular to look like Little Miss Know-It-All, and that the teachers would tell me how to do it properly, not my made-up way. So I was sitting alone as the other children paired up into tables and chatted away, and then Claire walked in. I had never seen anyone so beautiful. Her hair was long and loose, in defiance of the school rules, and it shone in the sunlight, like a Pantene commercial. She looked around the room at the other children, one or two of whom were patting the chair beside them hopefully, and saying, "Claire, Claire, sit with me." And she chose me. I don't know if you know what it's like being chosen by someone like Claire. It's as though a warm searchlight has picked you out and bathed you in its sunshine. You feel at once exposed and flattered. Everyone looks at you, and you can see them wondering, why her?
Claire sat beside me, and I felt myself transforming from a nobody into a someone. A someone people might actually want to talk to, be friends with. She smiled, and I found myself smiling back.
"Hello," she said. "I'm Claire Cavendish, and my hair is so long I can sit on it. I'm going to be Mary in the school play."
"I'm..." I tried to answer. "I'm... I'm Leonora," was what I was trying to say, but Claire only smiled.
"Hi, Lee."
"Claire Cavendish." It was the class teacher, banging the rubber on the chalkboard to get our attention. "Why is your hair not tied back?"
"It gives me migraines."
Claire turned her angelic, sunlit face towards the teacher.
"My mum said I wasn't to. I've got a note from the doctor."
And that was Claire all over. Was it really possible that she had a note from the doctor? Would any doctor in their right mind give a 5-year-old a note allowing her to have loose hair? But somehow it didn't matter. Claire Cavendish had said it, and so it became true. She did become Mary in the school play, and I became Lee. Mousy, stammering Lee, her best friend. I never forgot Claire's action that first day. She could have chosen anyone. She could have played the popularity card and sat with one of the girls with Barbie clips in their hair and Lely Kelly shoes. Instead, she chose the one girl who was sitting silent by herself. And she transformed me. As Claire's best friend, I was always included in games, not condemned to wait, lonely but trying not to look it, at the side of the playground waiting for someone to ask me to play. I was invited to birthday parties because Claire wanted me there, and when it became known that Claire had come to my house for a play date and had spoken approvingly of my swing and doll's house, other girls began to accept my faltering invitations. 5-year-olds can be incredibly cruel. They say things that no adult ever would. Cutting comments about your looks, your family, the way you speak and smell, the clothes you wear. If someone spoke to you that way in an office, they'd get the sack for workplace bullying. But at school, it's just the natural order of things. Every class has an unpopular scapegoat, the kid no one wants to sit with, the one blamed for everything and picked last in all the team games. And, perhaps just as inevitably, every class has a queen bee. If there was a queen bee in our class, then Claire was it. And without her friendship, I might easily have become the scapegoat, sitting alone at that table forever. Part of me, the frightened 5-year-old inside my adult shell, will always be grateful for that. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't always easy being Claire's friend. That searchlight beam of love and warmth could be withdrawn as quickly as it was bestowed. You might find yourself mocked and derided instead of defended. There were plenty of days I came home crying because of something Claire had said or something Claire had done. But she was funny and generous, and her friendship was a lifeline I couldn't do without. And somehow, I always ended up forgiving her. My mother, on the other hand, did not approve of Claire, for reasons I could never quite work out. It made no sense, because in many ways Claire resembled the daughter my mother was always trying to make me be. Charming, loquacious, popular, not too academic. When secondary school came around, my mother did not keep silent about her hopes that I would get into the local grammar, and Claire would not. But she did. Claire was not a swot, no one could accuse her of that, but she was clever, and she could pull it out of the bag in exams. Instead, my mum went to the teacher and asked that we be put into different classes. So in lessons I found a new friend, a companion just as unlikely, spiky, amusing Nina with her skinny brown legs and large dark eyes. Nina was tall where I was short. She could run the 800 metres in 2:30, and she was funny and not afraid of anyone. She was dangerous to be around, her sharp tongue making no distinction between friend and foe. You were as likely to be the butt of her wit as laughing at it. But I liked her, and in many ways I felt safer with her than with Claire. It made no difference, though. Outside lessons, Claire sought me out. We spent lunch times together. We bunked off and went to spend our allowance at Woolworths on the CDs Claire liked and the sparkly nail polish we were forbidden to wear at school. We were caught only once, when we were 15.
A heavy hand on the shoulder. Mr. Bannington's furious face looming over our shoulder. Threats of suspension, of telling our parents, of detention for the rest of our natural lives.
Claire just looked up at him, her blue eyes limpid with honesty.
"I'm so sorry, Mr. Bannington,"